On the show today, the sun, including how humans can collect all the energy that naturally emanates from it.
As humanity, we've always harnessed the power of the sun. You know, people putting out their clothes to dry, people drying fruit and vegetables, people orientating their houses towards the sun. This is the story of our survival.
This is Rebecca Collier. She is the executive director of Renew 2030, a global coalition working to rapidly scale renewable energy, especially solar energy.
In the turn of the last century, in the 1900s, people started to really think about how to do that from a technology and an electronics perspective. And so the solar panel was born. And at the beginning, it was really inefficient and really expensive to build. But by improving the technology bit by bit by bit, the cost of a solar panel has come down to now these days being cheaper, not just than coal, but also than natural gas power. And that means that solar, both distributed solar that you can put on your backyard or large-scale solar that might cover a football field, it's really now cost competitive and scalable.
Finally, some good news about dealing with climate change. The world is on track to install 29% more solar technology in 2024 than the previous year. More than half of the energy added to the U.S. electrical grid comes from solar now. Those rates are even higher overseas. But Rebecca's organization wants countries to make this transition even faster.
We want solar alongside wind to make up the backbone of the electricity system by 2030. And that feels like a Herculean task.
I mean, it's interesting. It's popular in my neighborhood to put solar panels on your roof, but I haven't done it yet because it's still something you have to go seek out. It's still putting in a fair amount of money before you see returns. So as easy as it is, and as much as I see it in my life, it still feels like we haven't quite gotten to the moment where it takes over. Is that's just my personal experience, but tell me if that's indicative of what you're saying.
I really think it depends where you are. So I want to turn this back and ask you loads of questions. Like, you know, what would it take? You know, do you want more leaflets through the door? Do you want neighbors knocking on the door and saying, oh, let's do it together? Do you want a tax rebate from the government? Or is it that you actually, when you do a renovation, you want your contractor to include it in a package and not even to have a think about it? Those are some of the things that we've seen work in other places. You're right, it's not everywhere, but we saw a huge uptake in Europe after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, partly because people were so concerned around their energy bills. In America, you've got some amazing credits in the Inflation Reduction Act. And in China, it's panel after panel after panel being rolled out across homes and schools and hospitals. So I think in some markets, we've reached a tipping point, but in others, it's still just getting off the ground.
In a minute, what a solar success story looks like. We hear about one of the biggest solar plants on the planet in Morocco. On the show today, making sense of the sun. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, making sense of the sun. And we were just talking to Rebecca Collier, who leads Renew 2030, an organization with partners all over the world working to accelerate the growth of solar power. Rebecca says solar technology is not a one-size-fits-all solution. There are small-scale distributed solar installations, the kind you might find on a house or hospital rooftop. But in other parts of the world, enormous solar installations are being built in vast sunny deserts, which could eventually power entire nations. That is the hope for Morocco.
Home to the largest solar energy plant in the world.
Nur, which means light in Arabic, is so vast it can be seen from space.
The Nur Ouarzazate solar plant is located southeast of Marrakesh, on the edge of the Saharan Desert.
The landscape out here, it's almost like it's from another world. Feels like we could be on Mars.
Morocco has always had to import its energy, so this new approach has gotten a lot of media attention.
In Morocco, we don't have petrol, we don't have gas. To be independent, we have chosen to use the clean energy because of the climate change challenge.
A few years ago, Rebecca went to see the plant for herself.
It's a magical experience. We were driving over like low, bumpy hills, and at first you couldn't see the plant in the distance. And you turn a corner, and then suddenly, even though you're still quite a few miles away, you can see the sparkle of the panels shining in the sun in the distance. And you can see this huge tower in the center of a football field after football field of solar panels.
Mm.
It's almost like the stem of a flower with all the solar petals around it, all facing in towards a central stem. And then the sun bounces off the panels, and the majority of them are mounted on the ground so that they can reflect the sun's beams directly into a central tower. Much as you would do if you're catching light off a mirror and trying to make it shine on the wall, but every single panel pointing in one direction. And that turns a traditional electricity generating turbine.
And where is the energy going from there?
Well, the real benefit of renewables is where it stays in country for local use in boosting the economy and boosting local industries that have an aspiration to also use greener, cleaner alternatives. And that's actually what's happening in Morocco. It's helping to boost Moroccan industry, and then the additional electricity, when it's produced, can be sold for a premium, much as, you know, countries have exported oil and coal and gas in the past. Morocco has the potential to become a solar energy exporter.
So solar could be a source of income for a country that's never been part of the energy market. This could be a real economic boost for them.
Well, I mean, that's certainly the thesis of many of us in this space, is that we see new solar states emerging, ones with the ability to produce not just solar electricity for domestic consumption, they can produce electricity for export, and that can be a new source of revenue and change the sort of energy and geopolitical landscape for a more secure and reliable one.
I mean, like, the amount of land that we're talking about is just extraordinary, but that's what's needed.
Well, I mean, I don't want the listener to come away with the impression that we're putting concentrated solar plants everywhere. This is a technology that is really, really suited to areas with the best potential around the world. So large, flat, desert-like spaces. These can produce the best solar thermal potential. But a solar rooftop on a school in a city, or a solar on your household, is also helping to offset emissions as well. So it's a combination of both the little and the large.
I mean, that's so interesting. We were just talking to Tammy Ma, who heads up the fusion project at Lawrence Livermore. And, you know, for her, it's the tech. That's the barrier to entry. But that is not the case with solar. The technology is there. The sun is shining. It sounds like you're saying a marketing issue.
Well, let's first of all just say up front, most people really don't object to solar. Plenty of times, it's just that they haven't thought about it. They have been told that it's unreliable and needs lots of repair, so they don't feel confident in the aftercare or the follow-up that might come with installing solar. So if you've got that sweet spot where there's some initial curiosity and the barrier isn't something insurmountable, then indeed it's, I mean, I didn't want to say it's a marketing problem, but it's a familiarity and confidence problem. And often what's needed more than anything else is knowing that a community similar to yours has done a project that's similar to yours.
Because we hear that a lot from critics, like, well, what about the days when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine? Renewables are too dependent on nature, which we can't control.
Well, that's one of the brilliant patterns of nature, is that often our demand for electricity is at the sunniest peaks. We've now got wind that can complement nature. It's often the windiest hours are when the sun isn't shining. And we've also got multiple ways to store the sun when the sun actually stops shining. It's batteries and grid technology that can store wind and solar or transport them from where they're produced to where they're needed. And so that's one of those enduring myths about renewable energy, but it's not borne out by the science at all.
I mean, it's very tempting, Rebecca, to be like, oh, phew, there's a good climate story. Something is working. We can do this. And if we just, you know, figure out this last few steps to go solar, all will be well. Can we say that, or is that way too optimistic?
Well, I think if we had time, you'd be absolutely right. You know, we have incredible engineers and incredible communities, and we will find our way, I think, slowly and surely to that type of genuinely more equitable, low-cost energy future. The trouble is that time isn't on our side, you know. So the reason why we created Renew 2030 was so that we didn't lose sight of the urgency of ramping up solar and wind.
Mm-hmm. It's not like 2050 going, you know, carbon free.
It's not like 2050. No, you're right. And so I do think that, you know, the new technology stories are the hopeful side of the climate agenda. They really are. If I had started out 20 years ago and solar and electric vehicles were where they are, I wouldn't have been able to give you a hopeful story on climate change. And you know, also when I started out in climate, we were on track for a decimating 6-degree future of warming. And we've cut that by most expert predictions to 3 degrees of warming. But that is still the dangerous tipping points in our weather systems that we are facing daily now. So I don't want people to take away a black and white picture of hope or despair or all or nothing. And the technologies that have come down in cost that we've been talking about today, concentrated solar thermal, different forms of storage, distributed solar, they really are a hopeful story, but also they aren't moving fast enough to help combat the worst effects of climate change, and they need a helping hand. And so that's where projects like mine come in.
That's Rebecca Collier, Executive Director of Renew 2030. You can see her on the TED stage at TED.com.